From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So when you're talking about women's rights in the 19th century, if you were a plural wife at the time in the Utah Territory, you found yourself in a remarkable position. Women in polygamy may not have had complete control over their destinies, but in practice, they were really independent, and for a time, they had the vote. It's hard to tease apart the history of polygamy and women's rights. It's the subject of Jennifer Nee's new play for the Plan B Theater Company, which is now running. Today in the program, we're talking about the play. It's called Suffrage. It's built around two women, two sister wives, each committed to a cause. The play is opening at a time when modern Mormon women are asserting their rights, asking to be included in the process. We'll talk about that, too, after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest play from the Plan B Theater Company. It's called Suffrage, set in the Utah Territory in the 19th century. It's built around two women, two sister wives, and it explores the complicated history of polygamy and a woman's right to vote. But first, the play comes at a time when modern Mormon women are asking their church leaders to include them more in the process. Some want more control, others want complete equality. Over the weekend, a group of LDS women who are asking to be ordained within the church's all-male priesthood met on the campus of the University of Utah. Joining us now is Kate Kelly, who is the founder of Ordain Women. It's a grassroots group of Mormons aimed at gender equality in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Kelly, we should say, is an active member of the church. She served a mission in Barcelona, was married in the Salt Lake Temple, and these days is working in Washington, D.C. as a human rights lawyer. She's joining us by phone from her office there. And Kate Kelly, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I wanted to start with what, for some observers, was the extraordinary news that for the first time, at least as I understand it, in recorded church history, LDS church leaders asked two women to give prayers in the semi-annual general conference. How did you react to that?
Absolutely. I was watching during the first session of Saturday morning conference when Sister Stevens gave her first prayer. And it was amazing. The first thing that popped into my mind was, you know, one small step for women, one giant leap for Mormonkind. And it was really encouraging to see the inclusion of more women in such a public way.
How do you explain it? I mean, can you say it was in any way some kind of response to your efforts and the efforts of other women who are asking for more inclusion?
There was a specific campaign called Let Women Pray, and they gathered about 1,500 letters. And they sent them to the leadership of the church requesting specifically that women be included in the conference and that they be allowed to pray.
So were you surprised? It seems like they turned that around pretty quickly. They responded to it, and there you have it.
I was pleasantly shocked, I guess I would say. I am so encouraged to see the leadership of the church responding to the needs of the membership. And especially in these ways where women can be included, you know, in a public way where other women and girls can see them, it's really, really exciting.
It's one thing to ask for inclusion in to say a prayer. That's one thing. It's another thing to say, ordain me with the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
So where does your effort fit in the scheme of things?
So we decided to start Ordain Women and launch our website, ordainwomen.org, on March 17th. March 17th was the 171st anniversary of the First Relief Society, the women's organization in the church. And we launched on March 17th, and then we launched this past weekend on April 6th, which is the founding of the Organization of Mormonism in 1830. And both of these historic days fit into our campaign because we believe that the ordination of women is the next step in the trajectory of the church. The church is a church that believes in continuous revelation, and we believe that revelation comes after we ask and after we seek and after we knock. And so this is our way of telling our leaders and telling God that we are ready for this change.
I should mention to listeners, we're going to get into this issue in more detail later in the week. On Thursday, we'll devote the whole show to it. But I wanted to get a sense of, is this a right, Kate Kelly? And I use that word advisedly. I'm not sure if you agree with it, but is it a right that you believe women once had? and was somehow taken away or diminished, or one that you think they should have in terms of the sort of the way things progress?
At Ordained Women, we believe both that women had this right initially in the church and also that we should have it now. We cited to the original Relief Society minutes where Joseph Smith said that he would ordain the officers to the Relief Society, which he called a kingdom of priests.
How do you, I guess you have a number of options for how you go about this. I mean, you could protest. You could organize, you know, some kind of action on or near church property. But over the weekend, you didn't do any of those things. You met to talk about it at a neutral site. You went to the University of Utah. Why?
We went to the University of Utah because part of the reason that we're doing this campaign and part of the reason that we want women to be ordained is because women's voices are marginalized in the church. And we wanted to hear from women. We wanted to gather as a group and create solidarity, and we wanted to make this decision about how we bring this message to our leaders together. And so we had over 100 people come out to the University of Utah, meet together, and really ordain women is an act of faith. We have faith in our church that it can change as an institution and be more inclusive, and we also have faith that other people would join us, and that faith was confirmed on Saturday.
How do you describe, Kate Kelly, your relationship with church leaders? I'm not sure how much you can say, but are they responding to you in any capacity?
I personally, before we launched the website, spoke with my local leadership, both in my bishopric and my Relief Society presidency, and told them what I would be doing. And they said while they were supportive of me as a member of the ward and as a daughter of God, they weren't supportive of the campaign, but so far we haven't heard any direct messages to our group from the leadership of the church.
Are you worried about your status as an active Latter-day Saint, as a member of the church?
Again, this is an act of faith, and I have faith that our message will be respectfully received, even by those who disagree with us, and even if that comes from the leaders of the church. We sustain the prophet, we sustain the Quorum of the Twelve, and we are simply asking them to prayerfully consider the inclusion of women in ordination. And I have trust. I have more faith in the church than that, and I truly believe that they will be able to respectfully receive this message just as respectfully as we are conveying the message.
Do you think you're in a similar position to gay Latter-day Saints who have been asking for the church to moderate its position on their behalf? Do you see yourself kind of in solidarity in some way?
I see us in solidarity, and women have been in solidarity with all different kinds of movements of people whose voices have been marginalized, both within the church and within society.
So you're seeing an opening, Kate Kelly? Or what do you think? Are you feeling, you say you have faith, but tell me what that means.
I feel very, very optimistic. We have received a really amazing response. And again, I'm going to use the term pleasantly shocked, because when I launched that website, there were 24 profiles, and I did not know who would join us. We've gotten a profile from a currently serving bishop. We've gotten a profile from a woman who's in her Stake Relief Society presidency. We are getting profiles and support from a really broad range of very Orthodox traditional Mormons. And this is just something that's extremely new and extremely encouraging. I'm really excited that other people have decided to join us. And now we have over 60 profiles up and many more in the queue. We've had 175,000 views on our website in just a few short weeks. And I think this message is really striking a tone with other people, and I think it's really getting the conversation and helping people imagine what the church could be like if women were ordained.
That's Kate Kelly. She's the founder of OrdainWomen.org. She's going to join us on Thursday again. She'll be back when we focus the show on the role of women in Mormon theology and the LDS Church. Kate Kelly, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Today in the program, now we're profiling the latest play, as I mentioned, from the Plan B Theater Company. It's a play that takes on the complicated history of polygamy in the 19th century and a woman's right to vote. Let me introduce the people we have with us on the program today. We have with us the playwright Jennifer Nee. She wrote Suffrage for the Plan B Theater Company. It's her third full-length production for the company. And she also wrote The Scarlet Letter and Wallace. And Jennifer Nee, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Cheryl Ann Clough directs the play. She's co-founder, managing director of Plan B Theater Company. Cheryl Ann, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Jerry Rapier is the producing director for the company. Jerry, welcome back.
Thank you.
And we also have April Fossen with us. She plays Frances, the second of five wives in the play. Fossen has appeared in several Plan B productions, including Lady Macbeth, and She Was My Brother. April Fossen, welcome.
Thanks.
And Sarah Young is with us. She plays the suffragist and fourth wife, Ruth. Sarah is a senior at the University of Utah, has been a part of Plan B Slam and Script in Hand series. And Sarah Young, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Suffrage, we should mention, runs through the weekend. We'll give you details about that as we go along. There aren't many, but there are some tickets still available. So, Jennifer, I want to start with you, and maybe all of you, actually. I do think it's interesting to see the timing of all of this. Within Mormonism over the past few months, you know, women are starting to assert these rights. Nationally, women are pushing for equal pay and equal access. You've got more women in Congress than ever before. What's going on, Jennifer Nee? How do you explain all of these things converging, the timing of all of this?
Jerry Rapier is prescient.
Yes.
I think that he's... He will tell you that, you know, who would have known that when they were scheduling the season, this all of this would be happening. But I tend to think that he's got some kind of magic ball someplace that we haven't seen.
Well, Jerry, what's the deal? Were you thinking, obviously you weren't planning on something like this happening, but surely you saw forces converging, right? Or did you?
Well, I thought it was serendipitous just that it was going to open General Conference weekend. I didn't know it would be the General Conference weekend. Jennifer and I started a conversation about 18 months ago when I stumbled on this little known fact that, and it was alarming to me that it is little known, that Utah was the second territory. Women could vote as early as 1870. Yeah. Only Wyoming giving women full suffrage predates Utah, but it's just a completely unknown and unspoken component of Utah history. And I thought, why? In a state that is kind of personified as being backward as far as the role of women, we have this rich feminist history almost from the beginning of our culture here. So why don't we know about it? Why don't we talk about it? Why don't we celebrate it? And when I talked to Jennifer about it, she said, let me get back to you. And in a couple of days, she had become this incredibly passionate researcher about suffrage and the history of Utah. And
studied like a kid during finals week is what I did.
But I think it's interesting. You've said that you were a blank slate before it.
I was.
It wasn't something you necessarily had thought about much.
Oh, no. No, no. Which was interesting. And I think sort of is an example of what Jerry was saying. I grew up in Idaho, but have spent the last two decades here and consider myself a Utahn. I had no idea, none whatsoever. And I had to really sort of dig deep to find any information whatsoever about the roots of the women's suffrage movement here in Utah and why it was that we were among the first and why it was that there was such a fight after that, when polygamist women and then Utah women at large were stripped of the vote. All of the many, many issues that sort of became interwoven, it was fascinating. And so I did. I crammed like nobody's business and really jumped at the chance to get involved.
How did you come up with the play that you did? I mean, I know you've... We'll get into the characters and talk about them as we go, but were you thinking about it? Did you always think it would be... you would set it in those times? Or did you... How were you working through all of that?
You know, a bunch of different ideas bounced around in my head initially. I thought about what are ways that maybe I could bridge time, you know, maybe place one of the characters in the 1870s, one of the characters here today, and maybe have them talk to each other. Maybe I would use actual historical figures, and, But in the end, I really thought it would be more interesting and moving if I just very simply told the story of two women who were involved in and affected by this really traumatizing time. And from that emerged Ruth and Frances.
Yeah. Cheryl Ann Clough, set the plot up for us, if you would, because I want to sort of start breaking this down a little bit. But these are, as I said, two sister wives.
Yes, the plot of the entire play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, basically.
Right. Okay. So you have Ruth and Frances, wives number 2 and 4 in this polygamist family. And Ruth is very outspoken and has a lot of fire to her. And she has attended a speech by Elizabeth Cady Stanton, one of the leaders in the women's suffrage movement, and is just on fire about it. And that moment sets pretty much everything in motion between the two of them. And so we see how Frances feels about the women's suffrage movement as opposed to Ruth and its impact on their entire family.
Their husband, Benjamin, is...
In jail. Yes.
Yeah. So that gives it... I think that's interesting because there's this element of... not desperation, but they have to fend for themselves more than they normally would. And I guess Jennifer, neither, not desperate, but the stakes are pretty high. Yeah.
They are. One of the things that struck me in both researching and then writing this play was the fact that these women were in many ways the heads of their household, because even when the men were present, taking care of 5 wives and 13 kids, you got to work hard. And in this kind of economy in Pioneer, Utah, it's not something where you go to the office and come back at 5. So, you know, these are women who really had to band together and establish for themselves a working unit by which they could provide for the needs of their family and keep their home and their lives working. So they were a lot stronger than I had envisioned, you know, sort of maybe seeing polygamy through a certain modern lens.
Mm-hmm.
I was really struck
You were skeptical.
A little bit.
Right.
You know, honestly, yes.
Yeah.
Polygamy is not something that I understand, or at least understood when I was beginning this project. So I was really struck by the strength of both of these women to stand up and fight this battle on two incredible fronts. One, to grant women a voice in the community and in the country in which they live. The other, to survive in a country and a territory that was incredibly harsh. You know, these are subsistence times. Subsistence farming was common. And so for both of these women, they really took on and shouldered a tremendous burden, one that I don't know that I could bear as nobly as these two.
I want to come back to this. I'm going to put this question off, but I want to get you thinking about it. And that is how your ideas of polygamy, you know, the modern version, how that may have changed.
Okay.
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Remind me of that. Jennifer Nee is the playwright of Suffrage. Cheryl Ann Clough directs the production. Jerry Rapier is the producing director for Plan B Theater Company. Suffrage runs through this weekend. There are limited tickets left for Thursday night and for the Sunday matinee. You can call ArtTix for the particulars, 801-355-ARTS, or just go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We need to take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are profiling the latest production of the Plan B Theater Company. It's a play that explores the complicated history of polygamy in the 19th century and a woman's right to vote. Plural wives in the early days of the Utah Territory had remarkable control over their lives and unique rights, like, for a time anyway, the right to vote. Jennifer Nee is the playwright of Suffrage. That's the name of the play. Cheryl Ann Clough directs the production. Jerry Rapier is with us, producing director for the Plan B Theater Company. We also have with us, as I introduced before, April Fossen, who plays Frances, and Sarah Young, who plays Ruth. And Sarah, I want to start with you. Describe Ruth for us. Rash, kind of open-minded, liberal. She's a little impulsive, maybe, it seems. How do you see Ruth?
I think I see her as all of those things, but she's somebody in the beginning of the play, she has all of these thoughts and she has all of this passion and feeling inside of her, but has no outlet for it.
Yeah.
And so she, once she hears about the suffrage movement and sees that women can be strong and she can relate to Elizabeth Cady Stanton and these women who are fighting, she finally finds some way to fight for her family in a way that she didn't know how to do. She has all of this zeal and then no way to do anything about it. And then she finds it and becomes a suffragette.
It's interesting. She fancies herself a strong, independent woman, but she says early on in the play that she doesn't like that she feels unsettled without a man.
Yeah, and I think she feels kind of stuck in the traditional roles that she's been put in, and she's very fascinated by a different way of life. And then she eventually, her views eventually evolve into not needing a husband, but she still wants love. She wants her family. She still wants that. But I think she comes to a different understanding of what her family is. It's not just having a husband and her sister wives. It's love, and that's really important to her.
Cheryl Ann, what were the conversations like with Sarah when you were putting the character together? What were the things that you were keying on as director?
The things that I was keying on with Sarah was this fire that she has at the beginning of the play that Sarah was just talking about, and she has no outlet for it. Yeah. And finally, in the suffrage movement, she does find that. And we talked a lot about discovering what brings meaning and value to your life and how that differs between each of these two women. I don't think Ruth necessarily feels as valued as she would like within the family unit, and so she needs to find another outlet where she does find value.
Yeah.
And that's has a lot of conflict right there because she's outside the home so much when she is greatly needed at home.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that because I think this conflict begins to emerge in this question of her duties to her faith, her duties to her kids, and then her duties to her cause, which she's on, as you said, on fire about. April Fossen, let's talk about Frances. Describe Frances to us.
Frances is the more conservative of the two, but she is just as passionate as Ruth about different issues. She has a sense within her realm, which is the family and the church, that she has a voice. You know, a polygamist family is run democratically. They meet to discuss issues. They vote on things. They have family meetings. And it's similar in church. You raise your hand to sustain. You raise your hand to object. Women have the same power as men in the church. So within that realm, she is passionate about making sure that the people she loves are cared for and loved and able to succeed. And that's where her passion lies.
Yeah. Her fight is faith and family,
right,
more than rights, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that she and there's these we'll get to a scene in a moment. I'll put it off. But the idea of her sort of defending her sense of family and her sense of faith is really profound. But let's talk about, I wanted to have you do a scene where Frances is talking about how she wants more than anything for, as she puts it, our lives to be ours. Jennifer, what does she mean by that?
I think that there were at the time a lot of people who wanted to define who members of the LDS Church were, who polygamist families were, and who women were within these polygamist families. I think that Frances really wants to just be able to exercise her faith and her belief in her children and in this way of building a family without being persecuted, without her children being persecuted, when they believe most earnestly that they are following a most high calling. I think that she just feels like she would like to be left alone by society and to honor her God.
And she's also, Jerry Rapier, skeptical in this section from the play. She wonders what difference the vote really made in the past.
Well, certainly. So just from a historical perspective, Frances has seen the vote given to women in 1870 and stripped away in 1882. And in 1882, only polygamous women were denied the right to vote. All other non-polygamous women in Utah could still vote. So this is old news to her. She's been through it, and she isn't sure of the power of the movement yet, because she's experienced what Sarah's character, Ruth, is just starting to see.
And there's this idea of, as she asks, April, she asks Ruth, what are you willing to risk?
Right. Mm-hmm. Because she sees that in the past, the vote has been used as a pawn in a game that has multiple sides, and everybody wants what they want. Some people want to keep polygamy, some don't. And they used the vote in that struggle.
Here's a scene from the play Suffrage, now playing. Production of the Plan B Theater Company.
We are at the head of a rising movement, Frances. There is much to be done.
You might start with laundry. We are all filthy and spotted.
How can you speak of... Sister, why do you not see?
See what?
All that might be attained if only we women would stand and claim what is our right.
What right is that?
To speak and have our voices heard.
We have that already.
Not as equals, not as individuals and citizens.
No.
We are delicate flowers to be shielded from the unsavoriness of lawmaking.
You have witnessed the delicacies of lawmaking. It reeks with a stench.
That may be so,
good men going this way and that against principle and promise, all to gain favor and power, if only in their own estimation.
Which we women will combat.
Huzzah!
Do not make light of this, Frances. Is it not true that while we may own property, pay taxes, and assist in supporting the government, we have no right to say who shall disperse those taxes or how that government shall be conducted. We have no right to say who shall decide on a question of peace or war, which may involve the lives of our sons, brothers, fathers, and husbands. If we have a voice, it is a whisper only. We deserve to be heard. We deserve the vote.
And what are you willing to risk to gain it? Miss Stanton said it herself, that the suffrage issue is but part of the Mormon question. Polygamy is intertwined with it. Our lives are intertwined with it. And there are those who would use the vote to attack us.
So we will fight them on both fronts.
But why now? Women had the vote for 12 years before it was taken from us. What did it change? Were we more free then? Did women rise up and claim what you now say we lack? There were no woman lawmakers, no councilmen, no governors, nor were women enslaved or their way of life impinged. We were free then, as we are now, to use the gifts God has given us as helpmeets to our husbands and counselors and teachers to our children.
It is different.
They use the same arguments. They are motivated by the same nefarious designs.
We have gained strength since 1870. We have the National Woman Suffrage Association and the Woman Suffrage Association of Utah. We have Brother Brigham's wife, Apostle Richard's wife, Sarah Kimball, even the Brethren of the Church supports us. They said as much in the newspaper. George Buchanan and Brigham Young. Under the laws of Congress, a woman born in the United States is a citizen just as much as a man. If woman is entitled to the name and position of a citizen, should she not also be invested with the rights and privileges of a citizen so far as she is capable of properly exercising them? These are God's chosen, who have spoken for all to hear. Surely this proves our cause is just. We will use these attacks against us to prove that women are not lambs being blindly led about by our husbands.
Is that how you feel about your marriage?
Of course not.
A relief to hear.
Are you satisfied with yours?
You would ask this?
I wonder whether you have questioned.
You are young.
I am
not. If you were not so young, you would know that anyone who has reached my age and years in marriage has asked more questions than you have yet thought of. Do not presume otherwise. What you know of life...
Respectfully. Sister, what if it can be better than what we have now? Should we not claim it if we can? It is true that I am subordinate, but might I not still ask? How shall we know if progress is possible if we do not try? You say women did nothing when they had the vote. I say there are those among us today who were not of age then, and we are determined.
Very well. Would I like the vote restored? Yes. But what I would like even more is for our lives to be ours, for our children to be unburdened from condemnation they are too young to bear. More than casting a ballot, I want to know that the ones I love have enough food and are kept safe from harm and cruelty and taught what they need to know to enter the kingdom of heaven as noble and exalted sons and daughters of God. I want to know that they are happy. This, to me, is more important than any vote, be it by a man or a woman.
I, too, wish for our children a righteous, honorable life, and that while they are here, on earth, they might realize a portion of that by exercising the freedom we will fight to obtain.
And if you lose?
Scene from the play Suffrage, from the Plan B Theater Company. That's April Fossen, who plays Frances, and Sarah Young, who plays Ruth. You know, it's interesting, Jennifer Nee, that Ruth thinks that this suffrage movement fits pretty well into, you know, they fit pretty well into the, you know, Mormon women fit pretty well. Frances is not so sure. She says we are different women. She sees some distinctions. And there's a moment in the play where Ruth says that Elizabeth Cady Stanton disapproves of the persecution of polygamists, which did make me wonder where did the suffrage movement think these strange women off in the Utah Territory fit in the scheme of things?
I believe that this was an interesting question that divided even women within the suffrage movement. There were some who, like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, said, while this is a practice that is associated with religion, which I do not condone, because religion in general is a delusion, she sort of put the whole polygamy issue aside and focused on the fact that these were women who deserved certain rights. There were other organizations that really had trouble with that particular aspect of their lives and didn't want to involve them as much as Stanton's group did. So it was interesting to see, even among the suffragettes and those who were working to give women the vote, that they too had to wrestle with this question of whether women received the proper respect, whether they felt the proper amount of self-respect within the bounds of their marriage, how those women should be perceived and included in that movement.
I did wonder how much practical power did they really have with that vote? I mean, weren't they expected to sort of rubber stamp the decisions of their, you know, leaders? It's not as if they were seen as a voting block. Even this, you know, capacity to be able to vote to sustain or object to leaders within Mormonism, did they see that as a real, was that a real power? Was that a real, do you know what I mean?
I think so. If I understand the question, it would... The notion that women would vote sort of in line with their husbands was certainly one that drove outsiders' fear about granting the women the vote. They were anxious and very, very concerned that the church would grow. And so one way to put the brakes on that would be to silence a block of voters that they felt were not entirely empowered. But I believe that there were also a group of women who considered themselves to be quite independent, who listened and heeded the words of the prophet Brigham, who encouraged them to receive an education, to have a profession, and to have developed their minds. One of the things that I kind of did on purpose in creating Frances was that she was the one who had a skill. She had an education and a marketable skill. And we learn at the end that her daughter is also obtaining a professional skill. So...
Meantime, Ruth can't do much of anything.
She
right? I mean, she can mend socks.
She can mend socks. She is an inspiration. She inspires others to act with her. So they have different skills, but in terms of the things of the home, she is less experienced.
But this is really where the play goes in many ways too, because you have, you know, you have Ruth running around the territory sort of, or anyway the city, making these speeches, being engaged, and Frances starts to see that conflict between her duty to, which is her duty. Frances sees it this way: my duty are to make sure my kids are fed. And then a few kids start going astray. You know, there's a daughter who, you know, has problems, you know, stealing things and stuff like that. And Frances is seeing this happen, and Ruth is off, you know, doing this. It's an interesting kind of conflict. Talk about how you came to that.
I felt as though at the core of the story that I was trying to tell was the fact that both of these women believed in their... way of life. They believed so passionately that they were willing to actually do what they believed. For Ruth, it was this enlightening thing where she felt like she could actually make a difference, and she felt like if she were to succeed, that families and that children would be stronger and more empowered for it. For Frances, it was the understanding that that in the realm in which she lives and hopes to live, the most noble thing that she could do, not just for now, but for decades and centuries, would be to build solid families, to raise solid, happy children.
Isn't this the modern conflict for women?
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, April? No. We're well beyond this.
I mean, it's the fight that we've had for decades between working mothers and stay-at-home mothers, and none of them respect each other and their decisions because they're making different decisions than you've made, and they can't possibly be doing the right thing for their children, and everybody thinks they know what's right for everybody else. But the fact is that we need both. You know, women, there are women who need to work to provide for their families. There are also, we need to have people at home raising the children, or else we have no future.
And one of the most amazing things I think that we've all experienced together working on the play is a different understanding of polygamy and a respect for these women and the ability that they actually had to focus on each mother's strength. Mm-hmm. So that they weren't, one woman wasn't expected to be everything that a mother can be for all these children. And I don't know that any of us are championing polygamy, but certainly that we understand it in its original form in relation to Mormonism had a power that was empowering to these women because they could focus on what they were good at and not be forced to do something they weren't good at in the service of their family, which was, it seems so rational and realistic, but it was very eye-opening for me. And maybe that's because I'm the guy in the room. But, but you know, it's exciting to see something you think you know in a very different way.
I want to have you do another scene here. This is because Jennifer and Cheryl, I want to get you on this as well. In some ways, the play is about It's about women's rights, to be sure, but it's also about what, about the modern family, right? What it means to be a family.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a little bit, in doing research for this, I found several parallels, and I had hoped to pose those questions in a way that would be applied in those very various ways. You know, what makes a family among consenting adults? What makes a family? And who gets to decide?
Yeah.
So maybe I wasn't so subtle. but yeah, it was, I did find lots and lots of parallels.
Well, no, I mean, you're not knocking us over the head. I mean, but it is, I think that it, that to me, I think seems a, clearly a threat anyway. And Cheryl Ann, set this up for us, if you would. I mean, because we should explain that in this scene, you have Ruth, who's giving the series of speeches, or maybe it's, I guess, it's one speech, right? Or is it? Yeah.
And then she's giving one speech.
Right.
That's
then,
her first.
Yeah.
It's a big speech.
Yeah, this is a big speech.
Yeah.
So she's full of fervor. But then you have April, who's playing, of course, playing Frances, who is talking to a local sheriff.
Right. So you've got those two things going on at once on the stage, and you kind of see the parallels of what's going on. And then after, you know, the sheriff discussion is done and the suffrage speech is done, they come together, and Ruth wants to know what happened at the meeting with the sheriff. They've been meeting about the wayward daughter who's been vandalizing things. And Frances is very upset because Ruth was supposed to be there, but instead she was out, you know, doing her suffrage thing.
Yeah, it's like she missed the parent-teacher conference.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's what it is.
Here's April Fossen, who plays Frances, and Sarah Young, who plays Ruth, the scene from Suffrage.
She does not understand. I do not understand, Brother Wilson, Sheriff. I do not understand why we are pursued and punished.
There are those who bind our call for woman suffrage with that of polygamy. They believe, and they have said as much, that they will use this issue to criminalize the way of life for many families in this community, including mine. My own husband is imprisoned. I know not what risks I take by speaking publicly. We shall see.
This is not directly your concern, I know, but why are so many people, some who are thousands of miles away, so concerned with how we create our family? You know us, Sheriff. You know my husband. He has done nothing to injure them, nor would he ever wish to.
Others proclaim restoring the vote to women will increase the power of the church, for surely we submit to our husbands in all things.
If our lives are a sin, let them condemn us where they worship.
But I know of no more independent woman than one who lives the law of polygamy, for she must hold herself up among many and care for the needs of more. That said, if you doubt us, let us prove it. Given the vote, we will study. We will learn and we will act for ourselves and for our families.
Let them bring us before their God and let him pass judgment.
To our sisters who believe in their heart, who fear in their heart, that suffrage is an affront to the will of the Almighty, I say only that the sole goal of our movement is equality under the law, true partnership with men in shaping the rules that govern us and to ensure that they are fair.
We are good people. We live and work and love like any other. Our hearts are the same and our desires, for ourselves, our children, and our fellow man. We are people of faith, which faith distinguishes us from others. But are we so alien as to warrant this?
We offer up to God what is his, acknowledging his supremacy in all things. And it is for this reason, because God himself has created us as partners to our husbands and stewards of the earth, that we engage in this work.
Having said that, I will ensure that my daughter pays her penance.
So, I am honored that you have so much faith in me, and I dedicate myself to this great cause and to you. We cannot fail. Well, what did he say? Francis, I have said that I am sorry. I have said it again and again.
Yes, you have.
Will you not forgive me?
I am sure I will.
Ugh.
You were not there. You left me there to grovel on behalf of our child and then escort her home from the office of the sheriff, alone.
I know, and I am sorry.
She is not of your blood, it is true, but we have taken a vow before God to serve as stewards and protectors of our children, and they are all our children, Ruth,
I
blood
know.
Or not. Then where were you?
You know, Jennifer Nee, it occurs to me, this speech, that Frances, which is, it's such a profound defense of her faith and her family. And it occurred to me this morning that it's kind of the polygamist version of the Shylock scene in The Merchant of Venice, you know, where he asks, you know, if you prick us, do we not bleed? I mean, she's sort of deceiving. We're not alien. We are. I thought that was lovely. I don't know if that occurred to you at all, but it sure did me.
Thank you so much. I've never and possibly will never again be compared with Shakespeare. but one of the things that I did realize when I was working on this play was the fact that at their core, each of these women are human, and that regardless of our feelings about polygamy, whether seen then or through the lens that we see them now, they are deserving of our honor because they are human.
Jennifer Nee, she's the playwright of Suffrage. Cheryl Ann Clough directs the production. Jerry Rapier, the producing director for the company. April Fossen plays Frances. Sarah Young plays Ruth. Suffrage runs through this weekend. There are limited tickets available. You can go to the website, our website anyway, radiowest.kuer.org, where you'll find links to learn a little bit more. We'll take a brief break and come back with some final thoughts. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the play Suffrage, which is now running. It's a Plan B theater production built around two women, two sister wives, each committed to a cause. It's about family and equality and faith. And 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Let me take a quick call. Jennifer is joining us in Vernal, Utah. Jennifer, hi.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I can't help but keep going back to Glynis Johns' marching song in Mary Poppins. And if you go back and look at the words, it's fascinating how applicable they are to the way things are now. There's always somebody who's got to watch the kids. Without exception, whoever watches the kids is compensated at a lower rate than, you know, anything else is going on. And until we realize the value of that, I think we're always going to, no matter who's voting or doing this or that, we're always going to have a problem. And men expect to be paid for what they do in general and expect women to work for free. And Brigham Young even said, hey, if these women had wives, they'd be a whole lot further ahead economically. So just a little observation.
I'm glad you called, Jennifer. Sarah was really excited about the Mary Poppins reference. Why? Because it had occurred to you or what?
Well, I watched that, the clip of that, because I don't remember Mary Poppins very well, but I watched that. Aww. And my favorite part of the song is when she says, our daughter's daughters will adore us. And that made me think, I just turned 24 and I've not really thought very much about the suffrage movement, and their daughters' daughters are not adoring them, is my thought. And why not? Why are we not thinking about this? Why do we not discuss this all the time? Because now I'm now passionate, like my character, about it. And I've been thinking a lot about my ancestors and my great-great-grandmothers marched as suffragettes in New York, and wow, they were both first-generation immigrants and from Ireland and from Czechoslovakia. And, you know, I've been thinking, what does this play do to help further what they fought for? And that's what I like the most about the play, is that we get to help get people thinking about it again.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite part.
Well, I promised we'd come back around to this question. There's this moment in the play where Frances and Ruth are talking about one of their sister wives, the first wife, Angeline, and they're musing on Benjamin's love for her. And Ruth asks this question, does he love us so much? And Frances says he loves us differently. And she says, really, when you ask such things, that can only lead to grief and to doubt, which adds another layer on all of this, which I thought was interesting. But it led me to the question, did this experience then, what did it, I guess, teach you about plural marriage? Did it change your perspective on the idea of love?
Well, my view of love is that it is the greatest healer and the greatest uniter, and I think that if people can have it in their lives, however they can have it in their lives, then they should, because there's not enough, it seems to me right now. But my view on polygamy is that in this time that I portray in the play, it makes sense. It really does. And, you know, it was a different time. There were the living conditions, as I mentioned, were incredibly harsh. The weather alone was enough to knock you on your, you know, keister. So dealing with that, plus the raising of children, plus the educating of children, plus the caring for, you know, your brothers and sisters in the church, it was all very communal. And I found a great deal of respect in that. April and I have both had similar conversations with our sisters, saying, we need to move next to one another, right. You know. And I can mow your lawn, and you can please, 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 because you're so good, make me cinnamon rolls. So, you know, there's something very, very appealing about that. So it does make sense. I worry a little bit. I'm going to try to. I worry about current polygamy.
Yeah,
I have
the modern version.
Yeah,
and so, the idea of consent, all of those things. I
yes,
guess, right? Yeah.
First and foremost, I worry about consent. It's a deal.
Yeah, it's a deal. Well, let me ask April and Sarah. Finally, we've got a minute left, less than that. So, your perspectives on polygamy, how it may have changed, altered your views, or changed them in any way?
I think in its ideological best form, I don't see a problem with it. I think it's kind of a shame that the church has disavowed it and tried to turn away from it and pretend it didn't even happen in some cases, because I think it was an honorable thing, and that women and the children were benefiting from the situation at that time.
Sarah, final thought?
Everybody has their preconceived notions about polygamy, and I definitely had mine, but what Jen was saying, it does make sense for that time period. And my belief now is that, you know, if you are all consenting adults, then, and that's your choice, then that you should have the right to make that choice. And when I look at the way polygamy is viewed now with the FLDS church and things like that, that's a very, very far extreme version of what these women had, that it's not the same thing at all. And people don't realize that. They equate it. They think they're one and the same, and it's really not.
Sarah Young, she plays Ruth. April Fossen plays Frances. We also heard from Jerry Rapier, producing director for Plan B Theater Company. Sherilyn Clough directs the production. Jennifer Nee is the playwright. Again, it's called Suffrage. Thank you all very much for being with us. Suffrage runs through this weekend. Go to our website for the particulars, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard, Andy Lane Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.